Welcome to Deep Breath In, the podcast from the BMJ, where we tackle the everyday challenges of being a GP. For so long, the 10-minute consultation was a given, part of the fabric of general practice. And in the old days, most things that people saw a GP about probably could be dealt with in a few minutes, leaving enough time to write a couple of words down on their Lloyd George notes and ask about the family. Nowadays, you can spend 10 minutes just reading the notes before you even call the patient in. And yet the 10-minute consultation slot remains. As does the BMJ's long-standing education article series, The 10-Minute Consultation, aimed at its GP readership. Today, I'm joined by three guests, whose research, just published in BMJ Open, has questioned whether any of the scenarios covered in the BMJ 10-Minute Consultation series can actually be completed within 10 minutes. We'll discuss their findings, the future of the 10-Minute Consultation, and the future of general practice. I'm Tom Nolan, GP and clinical editor for the BMJ. And I'm joined today by Alice Harper. Hi, Alice.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for having us on today. My name's Alice and I'm a GPST2, which means I'm in the second year of my GP training. And I'm currently working at a practice in Bristol. And I also have an academic post affiliated with the University of Bristol.
Excellent. I can see you're in your consultation room there. In terms of duration of consultations, where are you at with how long your consultation lengths are at the moment?
I'm quite lucky, actually. I've got double the 10 minutes, so I'm on 20 minutes at the moment.
Okay, and probably still a challenge, I'm guessing, because for a lot of things it takes longer. But great, well, nice to have you on. Carol, hi.
Hi, Tom. Great to be here to discuss this work with you here today. So my name is Carol Sinnott, I'm a GP, and I also have a clinical post with the University of Cambridge. So over the last year or two, I've actually been working at home as a GP in Ireland and doing my academic work with Cambridge remotely. And I'm luckily in a position now where I'm doing 15-minute consultations, but still finding a struggle to fit everything into that time frame. So I've very much enjoyed being part of this, the group working on this study.
Right. And 10 minutes in the past? Have you done 10 minutes before? And how was that?
Only when I was working in Cambridge.
Oh, right. Yes. That's Cambridge. Okay. Well, welcome and thanks for coming. And finally, Jessica Watson. Hi.
Hi there. Thanks, Tom, for having us on the show. I'm Jess Watson. I'm a GP in Bristol and an academic at the University of Bristol. And interestingly, reflecting on this, I moved practices about 4 years ago and specifically chose a practice with a 15-minute consultation slot. So again, I'm also working to 15 minutes and also still overrunning too.
Yeah. Well, I guess if we're all putting our cards on the table, I've also almost entirely worked at places where there have been 15-minute consultations, and that was what first drew, well, one of the things that drew me to the place I worked at for many years was that they saw sense and to have a longer standard appointment time. But is it still true that most places or many places still do have a 10-minute consultation model?
Certainly the Commonwealth Fund report, which was published last year and which the Health Foundation have subsequently done another report on, would say that the average in the UK is 10 minutes in comparison to an average of 15 minutes across countries like Sweden, New Zealand, 20 minutes then in the US. So, the average in the UK, according to that data, is certainly 10 minutes.
Okay. Well, let's talk about this research that you've just published in BMJ Open. Alice, do you want to guide us through that? Well, what was the starting point first? What were you trying to do?
Yeah, I think as a group, we were all really enjoy the series of the BMJ series of 10-minute consultation articles. One of our co-authors, Stephen Bradley, who is the lead author on this paper, was interested in looking at whether expectations had changed over the 22 years since the article series first began. So we looked at 44 of the 10-minute consultation articles, and we looked at all the recommended tasks over those series of articles. We then asked four GPs who will work clinically and they're at varying different career stages to estimate the time they think that they would take to perform each of those tasks. And using their estimates, we were able to calculate a medium minimum estimated consultation length and also a medium maximum estimated consultation length. So thinking about the time that would be required if you were to complete every single task, including those that may only be relevant in certain circumstances. We then looked at those estimates by year and grouped them into sort of 5-year periods and performed some statistical analysis to see if the expectations or the time taken to perform the tasks had increased or not over the 22 years.
Well, I guess we want to know what you found. And is it good news for the BMJ or not?
Well, I think the first thing to think about is how many tasks GPs were asked to do. So on average for all of the different presentations, they're asked to complete a medium of about 17 tasks for each presentation. And then thinking about the medium minimum time, so that time taken to complete the tasks that were recommended in all cases, that was estimated at 15.7 minutes, so slightly over that 10-minute consultation. And then the medium maximum estimate, so those thinking about time taken for tasks in all circumstances, so that was 28.4 minutes. So yeah, quite a bit longer than the 10 minutes. And then, interestingly, looking at it over the years, there wasn't a significant change in the estimated time required to complete tasks over the 22 years, which I think was quite an interesting finding. As I was the one sort of going through it or doing the data extraction, I thought that there would be, but we didn't find that.
Any thoughts on that? Or just Jess and Carol, do you want to offer any kind of reflections on what you found there?
I mean, another reflection for me is just the way that these article series showcase the breadth and variety of general practice. I think it's wonderful looking through the huge range of different topics that are covered. And I think, as GPs, we need to sh celebrate the kind of skills that we have, the variety of things that we can tackle, our sort of expert generalist skills are really showcased by that series. Sort of a positive take-home message that I had, especially looking at all the data extraction that you'd done, Alice.
Yeah, I guess to name some of those, the first was menorrhagia in October 2000, dyspepsia, binge eating, prostatic symptoms, and well, I can go on. Obviously, I could go on because there are loads of them. But yeah, it's true, isn't it? It's
It's a fantastic list, isn't it? You know, when you look at that and you think, yeah, that, and it does reflect our day-to-day work, I think. You know, it's a good reflection of the variety of different consultations that we face.
So that's a good. Yeah, I like that. Nice way of looking at it. So clearly that was it 15 minutes on average, just to get through it. And I guess there's other things on top of that. But did it include all the kind of other things that you have to do in those 15 minutes, or was that literally just the consultation itself?
We did include for each consultation, we included 2 minutes and 38 seconds, and that was to cover for, preparing to see patients, calling them into the room, and documenting in the notes as well. So that time was factored in, and that was based on previous research.
Yeah, that 2 minutes 38 seconds was from time motion data that I'd collected from 61 GP observations in the east of England in 2019. So our research team sent in observers into different practices around the east of England, and the GPs were shadowed basically for one session of work, so from 9 until 1 or from 2 until 6, and every activity collected on a kind of a piece of software on a second by second basis. So this is what the so when you look at those three discrete activities of looking at the notes before you call a patient in, going to collect them from the waiting room, and then writing notes after they leave the room, on average across the 61 consultations, which is about 240 hours of time motion data. That's how long those three activities took, with a
So that
huge
was
range there, obviously, but
two, what was it, 2 minutes, 30,
38
38.
seconds.
Okay, right. Now I've got something to do next. My next session is to see if I can not beat that, but just see where I lie within the against that benchmark. It's
Yeah, I mean,
interesting.
just by doing those three things, which are obviously essential for any consultation, you're after eating into 25% of your consultation time if you're working within a 10% or a 10 minute consultation model. And they're not necessarily things that we really want to speed up. I mean, we don't really want to speed up our reading of notes or our speed. We don't want to speed up writing notes. I mean, communication and coordination of care is already being stressed and strained enough without us cutting corners on these kind of important activities.
I think last time I was seeing patients, I remember I was starting to run more and more late, and the thing that did suffer, if I can be honest about that, is I took less time to read the notes, and I probably made lighter notes. Did you find that, or do you, I guess we all know that's true probably.
I think in the context of these 10-minute consultations, though, while we didn't find expectation inflation in terms of the amount of tasks changing, potentially it just feels in practice now like it's harder to deliver them because we're not giving that kind of time to familiarizing ourselves with the patient or writing our notes up, really comprehensively so that the next time we see them, we can pick up where we've left off. So just those compensatory mechanisms are just being squeezed out. And that's why delivering those clinical tasks within the same time frame just feels more challenging, potentially.
So, well, should we look a bit at the broader sort of points to this? So what has changed? What are the take-home messages from this? If we go beyond just thinking about the BMJ sort of thing, we'll come back to thinking about whether we should do something with our series. But I really think it's more important to look at the general practice as a whole.
I think most GPs and GP trainees, I mean, the 10-minute consultations were a tool that we used frequently during GP training. I did my GP training on the Southeast GP scheme in Ireland, and it was kind of a regular session in our program. And I think most GPs still would turn to the 10-minute consultations as a really useful repository of information on how they should underpin their clinical care. But what they don't encompass, I suppose, is all of the extra work we're trying to do within the consultation. So all of the additional kind of things that are unrelated to that one unique issue. So the prevention activities, the long-term condition management, the medication reviews. And then, our patients have become more complex. It's rare that we have a patient coming in with a single condition. We know most patients with long-term conditions, for example, have multimorbidity or multiple chronic conditions. And even those who don't, data would has shown repeatedly that patients attend with, on average, two to three different issues per consultation in general practice. And that number is probably only increasing as people stack up issues because they can't get in to see us. So they bring longer and longer lists because they're putting off coming until they can really make it worth their while to do battle with the front desk, basically. So like there's an awful lot, it's a very crowded 10 minutes now, so if it was the case that we were just looking at someone's sinusitis or their menorrhagia and we had some level of continuity with those patients, we could probably still deliver within the 10 minutes, but with all of the other work that's going on, it's an overburdened interaction. I feel my own research interest over the last few years and is looking at operational systems in general practice and how those systems actually support GPs to do their work efficiently. And some of the time motion data that I mentioned earlier has shown that actually our operational systems don't actually support us to do our work efficiently, that we often have to use workarounds and go to extra lengths to find the information that we need. So examples are the missing discharge letters or the discharge prescriptions that don't tally with our record of the patient's meds and having to triangulate it from another source. The IT that lets us down, multiple logins, IT systems crashing or software crashing during a consultation, forms not working. These type of things actually add significantly to the time that's been consumed in consultations and the time it takes us to do simple tasks.
Yeah, that's right, isn't it? I was looking through the list on your the paper you'd published on that last year, and it was all very familiar. Things like having to manually select which printer to every single time because nobody seems to have the answer to that. People are nodding there. Do you have to do that? What's your worst?
Yeah,
I think every day I'm printing something on the wrong piece of paper.
Yes.
They're mundane issues, but I mean, obviously, they when you're working in that pressurized kind of 10-minute interaction, they really add to the stress levels and make it, when you look at all of the additional clinical recommendations and things like that coming in, it makes it feel quite daunting, consultation after consultation after consultation, that's overloaded like this.
So, well, why do you think that people are still sticking with this then? If obviously we all here don't actually, we're fortunate maybe, or we've made decisions to find places to work where we don't have to have this extra pressure on top of all the other pressures of work. But why are some practices not changing?
I don't know if we have the answer to that question in this research.
No.
Certainly, what this paper is showing is that the delivering even the clinical tasks alone within a 10-minute consultation is not feasible. And that may go some way to explain why GPs are experiencing, stress at work, why there is increasing problems retaining and recruiting GPs. But why people are sticking with that model, I think warrants further exploration in its own right. Certainly, there are lots of different pressures on practices to maintain a certain number of appointments per patient per day, and potentially there's a fear out there that if consultation levels or consultation durations are extended, that there will be a huge response from patients in terms of actually feeling that they're going to get less access, that there'll be fewer appointments available in any one day. What's not clear though is if we did extend consultations across the board to 15 minutes or even longer, whether that would better meet people's needs, actually, and in turn potentially reduce demand. We obviously don't have the answers to that, but I think it's something that's worth thinking about.
It's certainly something that this evidence, backs up those calls to increase consultation length and adds to the growing body of evidence, including the evidence that you've published, Carol, in that area, really. So, and it's interesting that amongst all of us here, we're all actually in practices where they are starting to implement those changes and moving towards that 15-minute model or maybe even longer as needed.
Should we, because it kind of this touches on lots of other sort of changes in general practice, isn't it? And one of those we talk about a lot on this podcast is so the role of the GP and how that might have shifted, or maybe we're not quite sure what that ought to be at the moment, or can't agree quite on that. And there's a lot of talk about physicians, associates, non-doctor roles, where there's been a huge amount of money invested in England, at least in these roles. Jess, I mean, do you have thoughts on that, where that all of those different things fit in? And
Yeah, I mean, it certainly feels like what's happening is that our work as GPs is getting more complex because a lot of the sort of simpler, inverted commas, simpler on the day acute demand is now being dealt with by other colleagues. And what is left then for GPs is not the simple 10-minute consultations, but patients with, like Carol was saying, with often multi-morbidity, complex, multiple chronic conditions, multiple symptoms, multiple problems. Then the expectation to provide care to include all the kind of guidelines and recommendations, which it's great that we've got those kind of resources, but often it feels kind of unrealistic and we feel like we're forced to cut corners, I guess. And I think that's contributing to, as we've already mentioned, dissatisfaction, burnout, and moral distress amongst colleagues. So again, no easy answers, are there? But
I think that, to my mind, going to the 10-minute consultation articles, like has often been the one trying to edit and guide, give a bit of feedback for authors, is I think because what you want from an article or what you want from a guideline or just a conversation with a colleague is kind of how do I handle the more difficult stuff, when it's not, when they're not just answering all the questions as I'd like them to, but other things come in. And then I think that's where I feel a greater expectation or what that's where I want to learn and sort of be expert in is in dealing with the more complex situations. And that's kind of the way it's going, isn't it? In for GPs in general.
It is. I think one of the implications of skill mix and, GPs seeing fewer and fewer of their caseload and potentially only seeing like the top of the iceberg, the most complicated cases, is that we don't have that rapport built up with patients when they're well, And like there's very interesting information coming out all the time about continuity. And recently there was a really lovely paper from Norway showing the benefits of continuity for patients of all descriptions. So not just the older patients or the frailer patients or the more multimorbid patients. But patients right across the lifespan benefit from continuity of care at general practice level in terms of morbidity and mortality at all ages. I think back in those days, things aspects of general practice that potentially made it more manageable to do these consultations was that you had continuity with the patient, so you could pick up and you could leave issues and pick them up the next time you see a patient, or you were relatively sure that maybe that patient could get back into you at short notice if they needed to. If you only kind of, for example, tackled half of their issues in one particular day, that should they ring up next Thursday to get in, they could probably get in and see you that day. But those, again, I just think that those buffers that we've had of knowing the patient over years and then potentially being able to bring them back quickly again or have them come back to see you should things not go as you anticipated, they're kind of being eroded. So there, so.
Alice, I'm interested in as a sort of trainee, sort of earlier years of practice, and with you and your kind of peers, is continuity and all these kind of things that we're talking about here something which you have the same views on, that you'd like to practice in that way, or does this all sound a bit kind of nostalgic? Rose-tinted glasses.
No, I think definitely. I mean, personally, for that was an appeal of general practice for myself, is being able to build those relationships with patients. And I notice, I'm quite fortunate in my current practice that I can book patients in to see myself again. But I don't think all the GPs have quite the same luxury, just the way the appointments are all kind of set out. I think thinking about complexity as well, that's very much a focus in GP training at the moment. That's one of our kind of core capabilities, is managing patients with multiple long-term conditions, managing more complex cases. I was fortunate to do a care of the elderly rotation, which I think was really, really helpful with managing these kind of patients. But yeah, certainly I think there has to be a focus on that within training.
And on top of the skill mix thing, taking potentially threatening the continuity that we have with our patients, there's just that whole body of work that we have to do around coordinating our patients and systems not supporting that. From the paper, one of the longest task categories was trying to organize a patient to go to hospital. So that medianed out at around 4 minutes, like 4 minutes to try and get a patient in a consultation secondary care if that's what you felt they needed. I'm going to say that our findings are kind of backed up by a really lovely paper that was published in the BMJ last year by Mina
Oh, yes.
Johansson
Oh,
and
yeah.
Victor Montori and Gordon Guyatt. So just
Yes.
showing that, for example, if all of the GPs in Norway were to implement the European Society of Cardiology guidelines, they would basically only look after blood pressure and nothing else for an entire year. And similarly for GPs in the UK implementing NICE recommendations for lifestyle interventions, that would be the only task that would be completed were it to be implemented to the letter of the law as stated by NICE. So again, there it is. I mean, it's our findings, I suppose, echo some of Mina Johansson and colleagues' findings, and I kind of speak to the impossibility, I think, of getting even the advice that's set out in the most pragmatic of guidelines, like the 10-minute consultations, into the timeframes that are available to us.
Well, we have a very we have a podcast episode with Mina on that. So if listeners are listening to this and haven't listened to that, they can find it in our archive. But it's sort of setting GPs up to fail in a way, isn't it? Is that how
I
that's how
think
I
that's
feel
how it
about it.
feels sometimes. And I mean, if you extrapolated our data, so projecting that each problem's going to be 15.7 minutes, that's the median minimum time. If we have 2.5 problems per consultation, which is the sort of the average, and on average are dealing with 37 consultations per day, if you extrapolate that, we'd have to spend over 24 hours a day just consulting. So, when you think about it, it's clearly impossible to achieve that. So something has to give, and we're sort of setting ourselves up to fail, and we've got to kind of get real.
Anyway, the concept from Mina is time needed to treat, but this is the time needed to consult, maybe the time needed to put your computer on, but like sort out all the other little things also has to go into that equation too. So even going beyond the time needed to treat, it's all the other stuff. And then what about the time needed to like have a break or talk to your colleagues or, do something that would actually help you to sort of rebalance and focus better on your next patient.
Yeah, absolutely. There's so many different things that we need to fit into our day as GPs over and above just consulting. I think the general public perhaps don't see what goes on, all the work that goes on behind the scenes, that's perhaps less visible. Not just the administrative work, but like Ali was saying, supervising colleagues, clinical meetings. It's a very varied day, and that's one of the joys of it, but it can be extremely sort of time pressured and increasingly very long days as a result.
So what are there other solutions we can or possible solutions we can think about?
Well, there's no easy answers, are there? But there's lots of things that I think would help, and Carol already mentioned continuity of care being important, because then we can say we'll discuss that next time, and we can pick things up more quickly, if we've already got a kind of a patient that we know well. I think we can, in this room, we've got examples of people already offering 15-minute consultations, so it can be done. We don't have to stick to 10 minutes. And I think it's interesting to reflect in the future how new technologies might also help us to streamline some of what we do around the consultation to make that time in the consultation more efficient. And I know that in my practice, we're experimenting and using a piece of software where, when patients are getting in touch with us, they're giving us more information before the consultation. And in particular, one of the questions that they're asked is what are your needs and expectations as a result of this inquiry? So right there before they walk into the room, I can see that kind of that ICE agenda, ideas, concerns, expectations, and that can often help me to kind of get to that nub of things more quickly, rather than it being a sort of when they're just about to leave the room that they finally mention the main thing. So I think there's real potential there. I don't think that AI is going to replace doctors, but I hope it can enhance and make what we do more efficient and give us more time for what we're good at, which is, connecting with patients and exploring and understanding and helping them to understand and improve their health.
That sounds very optimistic. That's great. I'm very much much more positive now hearing you say that. And it would be nice if you knew that the person just wanted a private referral letter at the start of the appointment, and you didn't
It can
have to do
make that's
the
often
dance.
that often does feel like that's the thing at the bottom, but at least and you can then get to that quickly and deal with it.
Well, we're running out of time, which we've had more than 10 minutes, which is great. But so it's yeah, we'll need to round up. But if we just go around it, what from this project is it seems like one of those fun little research projects that you've done. What have you sort of enjoyed the most, or will be most memorable when you look back on this, Alice?
I think for myself, just being involved in the data extraction is just touched on at the start. It's just celebrating, the diversity of the presentations and things. And that's what a lot of people go into GP training for. As someone who's got their exam next week as well, the first AKT as part of your MRC GP, I'm hoping all the knowledge I've acquired will be reflected on my exam paper.
Well, I hope so. I hope there was some useful stuff in those articles. Jess?
Well, for me, it's been a nice way to reach out outside of the sort of academic audience. And it's been a couple of GPs from my practice who were not academics who've taken part and generously given their time and energy to this project because they really felt this was something that was important and that they were really interested in being a part of. So I just want to say a thank you to those four GPs who took part. That was Nigel Taylor, Harriet Delap, Helen Pike and James Gherkin, and it was great involving and working with them. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, thank you to them. And Carol.
Yeah, I think, general practice is a hugely rewarding career. I love going to my job as a GP every single day, but it is stressful and it does feel pressurized frequently enough. So I'm really glad to have been part of this study, which gives us some evidence for why it is, why we feel it's pressurized and stressful, and to, I suppose, offer some reassurance to the GPs out there who might also feel like, gosh, getting through all my consultations on time every day is a struggle sometimes. That there's a reason you're feeling like that. It's probably because you're trying to deliver really high quality care in quite a constrained time frame, and that hopefully this work will contribute to us maybe doing something about that.
Well, I am going to, as I said, take this back. We'll see what we can do. If you see a change in the 10-minute consultation article series, you will know why. And if you want to read those articles, they're available on the B&J website. And I think next time when the next episode of Deep Breath In might be our 70th. So if this is your first time listening, have a look through our archive. The one by Mina Johansson is a particular highlight. And do rate us wherever you get your podcasts. Mention us in your clinical meetings and have a listen. Thank you, Alice, Jess, and Carol, for your time today. It's lovely to meet you all.
Thank you. It's been
Thank you.
lovely chatting.
Yeah, good luck
Thank
in
you, Tom.
your good luck in your exam, Alice.
Thank you.
And we'll be back with more Deep Breath In next time. Bye for now.